This episode of Love to Sew is brought to you by Spoonflower. Shop from thousands of designs and support the worldwide network of independent designers, or sell your own designs and earn up to 15% commission on every sale. If you can dream it, they can print it.
Love to Sew listeners can get 15% off their first Spoonflower order at try.spoonflower.com/love to sew. And you can tag your Spoonflower memaids with hashtag Spoonflower Apparel. And now on to the show. Da 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 da. Hello and welcome. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Helen.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are discussing competition in our community, from literal competitions and challenges to designing original sewing patterns. How do we feel about competition? We answer your questions on the subject and share our personal experiences.
Are we at competition
with each other?
With each other?
I win.
Hi, Helen.
Hi, Caroline.
I hope I don't hurt people's ears when I do that.
It's just a really high frequency.
Yeah.
Hi. We lose listeners every day for various reasons. It. The way you talk, you can't change that.
Thanks for sticking around, guys. And thank you for all the love for our 100th episode. Can you believe?
I know.
100?
It was so fun to share that episode. So thank you.
Yeah. Of course, we are still collecting, hoarding, hoping for more questions about fabric for our fabrics Q&A episode. So please send us your questions over email, Instagram comments if you'd like. And send us some voicemails. Like, we want your voicemails.
We love hearing your voices. It's so fun to play them on the show. So please, if you have a burning fabric question, don't burn your fabric. Just call us.
Or if you're wondering what the fiber content is, you can burn your fabric.
Save it for the episode. Save it for the episode. Okay. What's our phone number?
1-844-739-9428. 1-844-SO-WHAT?
So what?
S-E-W what? Well, before we get to the show, we have some pretty fun feedback to get to.
Yeah, we do. Our first message is from Kim. Oh, you loved this one. Do you want to read it?
Yeah, sure. Kim says, "Hi, Helen and Caroline. I just wanted to say that I'm joining the many who just discovered your podcast and am binging episodes as quickly as I can. I, like many others, had no clue about the online sewing community and even thought that nobody really sewed clothes these days. How glad I've been to find out I was wrong. Your podcast really opened my eyes to all the resources that are available, including quality online fabric shops, reputable indie pattern designers, books, classes, and just plain quality sewing know-how." Well, thank you, Kim. "The wealth of knowledge on your podcast is invaluable, so thank you ladies for doing what you're doing. An interesting repercussion of seeing how huge the sewing community is has been realizing where my sewing skills really are. Last year, if asked, I would have said I was pretty good at apparel sewing. But now that I've really been diving in, I can say with complete confidence that I am very much a beginner. In Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, he talks about the 10,000 hour rule, which is basically the belief that if any person spends 10,000 hours doing something, he or she will become an expert in that field just by the sheer amount of experience that comes with 10,000 hours. Recently, I was considering this in relation to my apparel sewing, and while I've spent thousands of hours sewing in general, I don't know if I can even claim 100 hours devoted to apparel sewing. But recognizing myself as a beginner has only been a benefit to me. I don't mind as much when, not if, the finished garment is a little wonky. I view each new pattern as a new skill learned or practiced. Even a trip to the fabric store is a learning experience. Being a beginner rocks. I know I'm in good company and can say that I've fallen so in love with apparel sewing that when I consider spending 9,900 more hours of sewing and beyond, I feel extremely excited and lucky for having found a hobby I enjoy so completely. Sewing is good for my soul. Thanks again, ladies, for all you do. I appreciate you. I'm going to keep listening to your podcast, secretly hoping I never catch up, so there's always more to listen to."
Aw, thank you, Kim. What a great email.
Yeah.
I love this mentality that being a beginner rocks.
Yeah.
And just embracing every aspect of it and looking forward to all the sewing hours that lie ahead of you.
How many years do you think it would take to accumulate 10,000 hours?
I'd have to do math to figure that
out. We're not good at math. 1 million years.
Oh, Caroline. Beautiful, beautiful Caroline. All right. Our next message is from Sarah Jane. Hi from rural southeastern Manitoba, fellow Canadian. Listening to the episode with Brittany J. Jones on my way to work this morning, you were talking about sewing in smaller chunks of time and how it feeds your soul. My immediate response was an emphatic yes, this, 1,000 times over this, yes. Up until recently, I've always had a mindset that I had to have a block of time to sew in, long enough to get, if not from start to finish, at least start to almost finish. With a busy life, though, those large chunks of times were always so elusive that I found myself increasingly cranky and feeling at odds. Resentment had started creeping in too, and I felt like I never had any time. It wasn't that my family wasn't supportive of me having time. My spouse and kids are great about that, but more just that life has a habit of getting in the way. This past May, after hearing so many times on the Love to Sew podcast that people can actually accomplish things in small chunks of time, I decided that my own challenge would be to take advantage of those little opportunities as they presented themselves. Whether it's threading my machine before heading to bed, or sewing a couple of darts while my tea is steeping in the morning, or sewing a seam or two while supper finished simmering on the stove. It's been such a positive shift of perspective for me. Instead of feeling miserable, I'm happy. I feel productive. I'm getting time to be creative and getting that sense of fulfillment I get from sewing without feeling frustrated or overwhelmed about never having time. It genuinely does feed my soul in those little snippets. Keep up the awesome work you do, Helen and Caroline. Thank you for providing so much inspiration for not only creative, but personal growth as well.
Thank you so much, Sarah Jane. I can really relate to this because it was a very life-changing experience when I discovered that I could just sew a seam and, you know, a few seams later, you have a garment, you know,
yeah.
You could just sew in those small chunks. So I love that it took away that kind of guilt and crankiness from your life. It's done the same for me. I will say, though, and you and I were talking about this earlier, that sometimes, especially when I don't have anywhere to be or any responsibilities, I'll sit down at my machine, like before bed, and be like, I'll just throw this machine or just, you know, sew this one seam, and then one thing leads to another and I have a whole garment and it's 2 in the morning. So it doesn't always work for me.
You have to be careful. Yeah. Runaway train.
But that's okay, because it's not like I was, you know, I didn't black out. I consciously was like, okay, I'm going to continue doing this because I'm in the zone and I'm loving this.
Yeah.
So that's okay too.
It's definitely okay. And I want to add too that for those of you out there who don't have dedicated sewing spaces, I know you're probably listening to this thinking like, well, that's great. If your sewing machine's all set up, it's easy to sit down and sew a seam. I can totally relate to that because I sewed for years in my apartment without a dedicated space. And I had to get out my sewing machine and my iron and set everything up every single time. And my biggest tip with that is just don't let that get in the way of sewing for half an hour, because getting out your machine from the closet and plugging it in and setting up your ironing board really only takes 2 minutes. So don't overthink it. Just get out the stuff, sew for 20 minutes, put the stuff away, and that still can happen within half an hour.
Yeah, the more often that you do that, the less of a roadblock it's going to feel like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got this.
That's a great tip. We also got some great feedback about our episode all about rubbing off ready-to-wear. And the first piece of feedback is from Lisa. I enjoyed listening to your episode about copying ready-to-wear garments, but I wanted to point out that you omitted one of the most important steps when copying a garment, truing your pattern pieces. After making your pattern pieces and before adding in seam allowances, it's important to make sure that the front and back shoulder and side seams match each other. You will have to match other pieces as well, depending on the complexity of the garment. It's also helpful in some instances to compare the measurements of your pattern pieces to the measurements of the garment. This will make fitting your mock-up less of a headache. Additionally, it's a good idea to add notches to your pattern pieces to make sure they line up evenly when sewing. Thanks, Lisa. Are you a pattern maker?
I think she might be. These are excellent tips.
Yeah.
I can't believe we forgot to mention truing patterns. And I think truing or truing up is one of those terms that you encounter sometimes in sewing online and in sewing patterns. And it can be a bit confusing.
I'm like thinking if I didn't know what that meant, I'd be like, but my pattern pieces are true.
They're true. They're here. They're in front of me.
They're real. What do you mean?
So truing or truing up, just as Lisa explained in her message, is making sure that they match up. You obviously want the side seam on the front bodice to be the same as the side seam on the back bodice. So when you sew them together, you don't have a jagged edge on the bottom. Same with your shoulder seams. Just making sure that everything is lining up properly. It's a very important part of the pattern making process. So thank you for pointing that out, Lisa.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa.
Our next feedback is from Cindy. I loved listening to your latest podcast on rubbing off ready to wear. Just last week, I finished a self-drafted shirt from an old ready to wear shirt that I loved. And I have one more tip. After you cut apart your old garment and use it to draft your new pattern pieces, don't throw it away. I happened to keep my pieces and I was surprised how often I got them out to remind myself of details that would have been lost. I thanked my past self many times for this step. Love your podcast and I'm happy to hear that you are growing.
This is such a great tip because what comes to mind for me is jeans. You know how jeans, like I often will refer to ready to wear jeans when I'm sewing my own jeans because those little details, those little industry details, like the top stitching on the pockets, like coming in a little bit and the inner top stitching, you know, or bar tacks, or there's always those interesting details that you can pick up from ready to wear.
Yeah.
So keeping that garment is a great way to just have a reference that you can go back to and decide, do I want to do this or do I not want to do this? But at least you have a reference.
Yeah, exactly. Or taking photos as you're taking it apart, documenting the process. Definitely a good tip.
Yeah. And then we also had a couple emails from two listeners, Suzanne and Carol. They both mentioned that Kenneth King's genius class on Craftsy is really great. He shows a method of using silk organza and colored pencils to rub off a pair of jeans. So we didn't find that when we were doing our research because it's called Genius. It's not called
copying jeans
or whatever. But we're really happy that a couple of our listeners let us know about that class because it sounds really awesome.
Yeah. And it's a cool technique that we also didn't talk about in the episode, which is similar to when you're a kid. And I don't know if you ever did this with like leaves like and paper and pencil crayons or colored pencils, as they're called in the States, and you just rub it off literally and you have this like finished thing on the paper that it's replicating whatever's underneath.
Yeah.
And that's where the term rubbing off comes from. Also, thank you to everybody who
had a sense of humor about
the title.
Yeah,
that's what it's called in the industry, and so that's what we called it.
Yeah, there you go, guys. Get your mind out of the gutter. Okay, are we gonna get to the show?
We're gonna get to the show. An interesting topic.
Yes.
That was your idea.
Yeah, we're gonna try to touch on a couple of different themes throughout this episode, but I would be remiss if I didn't sort of explain the whole origin story of this idea for this episode. And for me, that was a post by Rachel of Imagine Nats on Instagram. And this would have been a few months ago, but she sort of was sharing her thoughts about fabric. Imagine Nats is an online fabric store and community. And during this post, she specifically pointed to my shop for a fabric that her customers were asking for that they had seen in like a preview that she showed at a market. And we happened to have released the fabric before she did. And she actually told her customers, like, if you want this fabric now, go get it from Blackbird. They have it up right now. If you need it now, go grab it. And really the spirit of her post was that there is room for all of us in this community. And to be completely honest, I was a little bit taken aback when I read that and when I saw that she was pointing her customers and, you know, away from her shop and towards my shop. And I was really flattered and I was really honored that she was okay with doing that. And it kind of triggered a bit of a period of reflection for me because I am quite competitive by nature, especially in business. And I've always been kind of protective of my business and held it really close. And, you know, I really felt like I had put so much time and money and sweat and tears building this business. And I started my career in the fashion industry, which is a very, very competitive industry. So I really didn't know anything else other than being a little bit cagey, I guess, about business and not sharing too much, like keeping your sources close. But then on the other hand, I really did agree with Rachel and I do feel like there is room for all of us. So I was in this point where I was like, Helen, I feel like we need to talk about this on the podcast because I'm feeling so conflicted and I want to like work through this. So I'm hoping today will be an opportunity for us to just like chat about this whole idea of community over competition, not just in business. Obviously, I'm talking about it through the lens of business because I own a business and that's a big part of my life, but also through the lens of just sewing as a hobby and having, you know, taking up space in this community and what that means.
It's an opportunity to kind of touch base about lots of things that are happening in our community right now, especially as the community continues to grow. It's getting bigger and bigger. We're getting more and more listeners every day. So it's nice to take a moment to talk about these bigger picture things and invite everyone to provide feedback, and we can continue the conversation on the show, which has proved to be a great platform for us to learn a lot from the community and also to spread different points of view.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to reading people's thoughts and hearing people's thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. I think what I struggle with the most is that comparison trap, and we're going to talk about that later in the show. But in business, even though I know that my business is doing its own thing and it's successful, it's still really easy to compare yourself to others. And for me, that turns into this vicious cycle that I really don't feel is healthy. So to be completely honest, I feel like I'm still on this journey. And that's why I felt like this episode was really important to do, just to remind myself of all the reasons why I think community should always trump competition, or usually.
It's a tough balance when you run a business. And I think you're being a little hard on yourself because you put a lot of time into this show, and I know that people email you about starting fabric companies and you reply to all those people with lots of great tips. So you are super supportive of others as well. Lots of indie pattern companies, you're carrying fabrics and patterns and other products from all these different companies. I mean, it's all a balance.
Yeah. So one of the things that we wanted to touch on was like, what does just this theme of community over competition mean to us right now? And for me, I think beyond the lens of business, I do really think that it's important to foster community above all else and kind of encourage this safe space for everybody in the sewing world. Another thing that I think is really cool and sort of unique to the sewing world is that this community is really fueled a lot by a lot of women run businesses, which I think is a little bit more rare. And I love that we get to support women, many of which are doing this part-time and, you know, supporting their families with their small businesses. So I think that's a really cool thing that we can do, is just like lift each other up. I also feel really strongly that along with a spirit of community, there should also be a certain level of like mutual respect. So respect for other people's work, which we're going to talk about later, respect for boundaries, respect that sharing means different things to different people. And yeah, I guess in conclusion, I think that community and sharing is incredibly valuable, but alongside that, there needs to be respect and understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is important to feel out boundaries when you are talking about helping other people or asking for help from others, and just making sure that you're being respectful in that process. And yeah, we're going to talk about that.
And understanding that not everyone is going to feel the same way about everything. And that's okay, right? That's part of community, I think, is like understanding that different people have different opinions.
Yeah.
And everyone's entitled to their own opinion.
Mm-hmm. And if your opinion is different than ours, we want to hear from you.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me a little, I feel like I just talked for a long time. So tell me what your thoughts are about this topic, because it kind of muscled you into this episode.
I was unsure about this episode mostly because I like the episodes where it's like, okay, we're going to talk about swimsuits, and it's, you know, it's easy for me to prep for that. But let's talk about community over competition. It's very broad.
It's abstract. Yeah.
Abstract. And of course, we're both in it and we have personal experiences with this. So it makes it a little bit more personal. But I will say that I am an extremely competitive person, and I always have been, not just in sportsmanship. Like when I was in elementary school and high school, I was competitive in sports, and I'm also competitive in my business, and I want to accomplish a lot with my pattern company, and I hold myself to a pretty high standard, and I expect a lot from myself and from my assistant and doing this show and just everything, you know, like I like to push myself, and I'm competitive in that sense. And I'm also know about myself that I get really competitive and jealous sometimes of other people, and it's hard not to do that because I think it's just a part of my personality. But over the years, I've learned that I need to check myself when I start having those feelings. So like if other people experience success or, you know, some kind of windfall or get, you know, a lucky break, I'm happy for them, sure. But there's always that like nagging sort of jealous, like, oh, like, how can I get that? Or, oh, what can I do to reach that goal too? Or, you know, like, you know, what am I doing to balance the scales, basically, right? Mm-hmm. And I've always been that way. And I do have to check myself. So I try to remind myself of that and keep that in mind.
Do you find that even with things that you didn't even know you wanted to do, and then you see somebody else do it, and you're like, oh, that's like a new goal of mine now? Like, I find that too, where that is that comparison trap. You're looking at what other people are doing, yeah, and then just realizing that maybe that's something that you also want to achieve.
Yeah. So maybe that's part of the reason why we both do have our own businesses. Yeah. Because that you can channel a lot of that energy into running a successful business. Yeah. And you can still do that and be really respectful and friendly with your competitors, which I do feel like I am. I have very strong relationships with lots of indie pattern designers. I'm always willing to chat about pattern design with anyone. I love having little Skype phone calls with people and just, you know, learning about what other people are up to and sharing knowledge and things like that. I really do love doing that, but I also love competing with them. So it's it's a balance, like you were saying. And community has always been at like the core of what I've done. Starting out my business as a blog and sharing my own sewing, making all sorts of different pattern designs out there, just loving every aspect of the sewing community. Started the Wednesday Weekly right off the bat and was sharing all the new pattern releases and what everyone else has been up to and celebrating all the creatives out there. And now teaching other people to sew as well and dedicating time to that has been really rewarding. Encouraging friends and family to start projects. And if anyone ever wants to chat about starting some kind of creative side hustle, I'm all over it. I love talking about that. And I think more than ever for Helen's Closet right now, what we're focused on is representation and inclusivity. And that's why this whole year is focused on our new size range and also our new models and just finding ways to represent more people in the sewing community. And I think that's a theme for a lot of pattern designers and other people in the community right now as well. And it's awesome. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love community and I love competition. So maybe it's not community over competition.
Maybe
so
it's
much
community alongside competition.
Yes.
No, I have so much respect for you in that you are never afraid to like hop on a call with someone. I feel like every time I see you, you're like, yeah, I was just Skyping with her the other day, like talking business. And I'm like, how do these opportunities present themselves to you? I don't know. I think you just sort of like invite conversation and you're super open. And I really love that about you. And I think that that is a way that you're kind of fostering community, is by being open to chat with other business owners or other people that are interested in what you're doing.
It's so much fun. And I always learn something, and I hope that other people learn something from me. And that's a win-win situation, yeah, right?
So the first sort of theme that we want to touch on is pattern design. And we have definitely had questions from listeners about this before, or business owners who are designing and wondering, are there lines? Where are the lines? What is copying? What is not copying? So maybe let's play a voicemail from Nancy.
Yeah.
Hi, Helen and Caroline. My name is Nancy and I'm calling from California, rainy California today. I just want to say I love the podcast. It has given me a wealth of information. I do have a question, or maybe seeking some advice. I am a fashion student and I'm learning pattern making and all that good stuff. I have a lot of ideas of possibly in the future, of course, creating patterns and eventually selling them if I get to that point. But one of the things that came up while I was drafting, in a sense, or, you know, getting my ideas on paper, is how, with all the influence out there in fashion, other patterns, how can we avoid in copying, I don't know if that would be the right word, avoid copying, or how can we find out if a design that we believe maybe coming from our imagination is not already out there? It's impossible to really find every single pattern out there or to not get influence or inspiration from other items, but I would want to make sure that the things that I'm creating are not stealing or copying someone else's design. So I don't know if you guys have thoughts on that or any resources that I can review as I'm trying to grow my creativity in this field. I really appreciate your help. Have a good day.
And we have a similar question from Bailey. How do you know when making patterns or even your own clothing line that you're not stealing someone else's design? I'm so worried about this and it's my biggest roadblock right now and I don't know how to proceed.
This is challenging.
It is challenging. I mean, a really clear cut statement that I can make is just, if you didn't outright steal it, then you're not stealing it. Yeah. You know, I think you'll know if you stole it.
Yeah,
because you'll have those feelings in the pit of your stomach because you stole it. If you came up with a concept for a garment and you put it out there and then 2 weeks later you see something similar and realize that it existed before you did your thing but you had no idea, then you didn't steal it.
Yeah,
that there's a very clear difference there.
I see that difference, but I think what a lot of people struggle with is, let's say you start working on a design and you're really into it and you're so excited to release it, and then you realize that there's something similar on the market. Mm-hmm. Do you proceed? And I know you've run into this kind of roadblock before, so I want you to talk about that a little bit. Like, how do you decide, why would you decide to move on with that versus abandon it and say it's been done before, we don't need another
whatever
A-line skirt pattern or whatever? Yeah. You know,
yeah, I think in fashion it's almost all been done before. Yeah. Or, you know, maybe it has all been done before, and I don't know if there is such a thing as a truly original idea. So for me, having just released two patterns recently that were very simple, wearable basics that are similar to other designs on the market, of course I did not invent the woven tank or the gathered waisted skirt.
Yeah.
You know, of course not. But I know that those patterns have special details, and I know I put tons of effort into making them just right, and that they're uniquely mine. And it's not just about the fact that it's a gathered waisted skirt. It's so much more than that because of all of the extra detail that I put into my instructions and just, you know, getting that just the right amount of fullness and gathers and the pocket details and how you want to construct it. There's all these different areas where you can take a moment to make it uniquely yours. And if you drafted it from scratch, then you have the right to release that as your own.
Yeah. And especially I think in the indie sewing world, if you have fans, if you have customers that love buying your patterns, they might want to buy something from you, even if they can get something similar somewhere else, because they trust your instructions and they trust the quality of your drafting and they know that they fit into that specific size. Everybody's block is a little bit different. Everybody's ease might be, you know, like, I feel like there's so many different factors. So really, like you said, whatever you're creating is unique to you. Mm-hmm. And there is a place for everybody.
Yeah. I think it's really hard when you're getting started. And it sounds like both of these women who have asked questions about the subject are getting started in this industry and wondering how they can create a space for themselves. And I think if you want to have basics in your clothing line or your pattern line, like t-shirts or boxy tops or skinny jeans or, you know, whatever it is, you, of course, can do that. The other pattern designers or fashion designers out there that have those things, they didn't invent those things either.
Yeah.
Right? So, of course, you can have those things. But it's also great to have those really unique pieces that when people see them, they're like, oh, that's so-and-so's pattern. Recognize it immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you've got to have the Yorks in the collection that make a statement. And having a balance of those things, I think, is really great. So that's something to keep in mind as you're designing.
And then it does go without saying that you never want to outright copy somebody else's design.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
you're
not buying
someone's pattern and literally tracing it and reselling it, that is completely, completely wrong. Please don't do that.
I think everybody knows that they should do that, but we should just say it maybe.
Does it go without saying?
Does it go without saying? We said it.
So if you've developed the pattern from scratch and you tried your best to make it unique, then you absolutely can sell that design. And you will have to compete with others if you are creating something that is a bit more basic, that is a little bit more commonplace. You are going to have more competition. So try to make those little differences stand out. And there's lots of different places where you can make those little differences. And they make a big difference to your customers. I found that not all home sewists want to draft their own boxy woven top. You know, not all home sewists want to hack their own patterns. They just are looking for the perfect design with the perfect detail that already exists, and they'll buy that and make that rather than doing it themselves. Of course, there are people out there who will want to do it themselves, but there are lots of people that are just on the hunt for something and they don't already own every pattern on the market. So when they see yours and it's got all those perfect details that they wanted, then they're probably going to buy that. Yeah. And you can also make yourself stand out with different marketing, styling, different models, the way that you share it, present it in your newsletter, on your social media. A lot of sales is marketing.
Mm-hmm. And setting yourself apart in terms of the size range that you offer. Mm-hmm. That's a big conversation that's happening in the community right now. And for any pattern designers out there who are just starting out, start out with a wide size range. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I think that's really, really important right now.
Yeah.
This episode of Love to Sew is sponsored by Spoonflower. Thousands of entrepreneurs, makers, and businesses, big and small, are powered by Spoonflower's on-demand digital print process. They are your marketplace, your supplier, and your warehouse. If you can dream it, they can print it. Spoonflower is proud to support small business owners. Applications for the Fall Spoonflower Small Business Grant are due August 15th. We will link it in the show notes.
Are you sewing swimwear for your summer vacation? Try Spoonflower Sport Lycra. Sport Lycra has been tested and has a UVA at 99.9% and UVB at 99.96% with a UPF rating of 50+. Using Fill a Yard, you can get two designs on one yard, perfect for mix and match suits. Share your handmade garments featuring Spoonflower fabric on social and see what our community has been crafting with hashtag Spoonflower and hashtag Spoonflower Apparel.
At Spoonflower, there are 20+ available fabrics, so you can find just the right fabric for every project, plus wallpaper, including their fan favorite peel and stick wallpaper that is removable and repositionable. Not all peel and stick wallpapers are the same, and theirs are 100% recyclable. And there are no minimums. You can order as little as an 8-inch swatch.
Love to Sew listeners get 15% off their first Spoonflower order at try.spoonflower.com/love to sew. That's try.spoonflower.com/love to sew.
So what about from the perspective of somebody who's just sewing in the sewing community and has a pattern and then something else comes out from a designer that they really love that's kind of similar? Do you think we have to buy all the patterns all the time?
Definitely not. Definitely yeah. not. You can totally use those TNTs or do what, you know, Susie Furrer was talking about in her pattern making episode, make your custom sloper. If you're just sewing for yourself at home and you see that Helen's Closet came out with a boxy A-line woven tank and you already have a woven tank in your collection, you think to yourself, oh, I could buy the Ashton, or I could just take my sloper and make it a little more A-line and add a hem facing. Please do that.
Yeah.
You know, you're just sewing for yourself at home. Go nuts, you know, explore your creativity, draft your own patterns if you want to, buy whichever pattern strike your fancy. And I don't want anyone to ever feel pressured to purchase more patterns than is necessary.
Yeah, I agree.
Hopefully other designers agree with me. Speaking from my personal experience.
Yeah, of course. This is all that we do is speak from our personal experience. All right. So we also had a really interesting question about where you should purchase your pattern from. And this question is from Lauren. Hi, ladies. Your recent interview with Kate from The Fold Line has me wondering, what is the best way to support indie designers or small business owners? For instance, Helen's patterns are sold on her own website, on The Fold Line, on IndieSew, etc. How do you choose the best way to support when you want all of them to succeed?
This is such a sweet question.
Yeah, it's so thoughtful.
It really is. And a lot of designers are also sold in stores at fabric shops. Caroline, you carry a lot of designers' patterns. And how it works is that the designer gets a cut and the reseller gets a cut. Of course, you probably realize that, but they both get a cut of the sale. And so it is kind of a win-win. The best way to support a pattern designer individually is to buy from them directly if you want all of the proceeds to go to them. But there are reasons why you would want to buy in store. Maybe you're making a fabric purchase at the same time, or maybe you're purchasing multiple patterns from all sorts of different designers and you just want to put them all in one shopping cart and check out, in which case, you know, IndieSew or The Fold Line is a great place to do that. I think if you do want all of them to succeed, then you're just going to have to spread it around.
Spread that love around.
Spread the love around. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for pattern designers, a lot of the time, the reason why they're wholesaling their patterns and putting them in fabric shops is to reach new audiences. Even with Indie Sew in the fold line, you know, you're agreeing to sell on their websites. That's something that you have decided consciously to do, you know? So I think wherever you buy the pattern from, you're supporting that designer, you're supporting the business that you're supporting. It's all good. You're putting your money into the sewing community, into indie businesses. I think that is the most important part.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Our next question is from Raylene about making and selling garments.
Ooh, juicy.
Juicy, yes. Is it considered taboo to make a garment using a commercial sewing pattern, adding your own label and selling it? Are there people doing this? What about hacking a commercial pattern and adding your own take? What are the rules around it? I guess what I'm asking is there some kind of sewing etiquette handbook we should be aware of? I'm keen to hear what your thoughts are on this subject.
I'm keen to hear what your thoughts are on this subject.
I wish there was a sewing etiquette handbook is how I feel.
No, I mean, this is tough because you're selling patterns. People might buy your pattern, love your pattern, and wonder, hey, maybe I want to start a business and make some garments out of this pattern. So what would your answer be to somebody who's asking you that question? Can I use your pattern?
My answer is, first of all, I always appreciate it when people ask. Mm-hmm. I think that's very respectful, and it is a good idea to ask a designer before you do this. And my answer is that our patterns are not licensed for that use. They're for home use only and not for commercial purposes. And I usually say in my email that, you know, if you want to make some pairs for your friends and family, maybe you want to charge them $20 for it or have them pay for the fabric, that's fine. It's just when it gets to the point where you are producing them for sales at craft fairs or on Etsy, starting your own kind of fashion label, but using someone else's designs. In my case, that's not what the patterns are for.
Yeah. Because if you really think about it, if you are somebody who's producing clothing to sell, if you were to hire a pattern drafter to draft a pattern for you from scratch, that could cost you hundreds of dollars. So that doesn't really equate the value of a $15 or $20 indie sewing pattern. You know, you need to realize that somebody who is providing that pattern for you and you're then profiting off of that, I think that that person needs more compensation. And it's really a question that you need to be asking each individual company if you're thinking about doing that. Because I think that not everyone's going to have the same answer as you. So it's good to ask.
It is always good to ask. And that's a really good point. And that's why it's not licensed for commercial use. And I don't have, you know, that setup where maybe there would be a different price point for that kind of use. And I don't get the question that often. But I'll also say that if you want to start your own little side hustle or full-time business selling garments, whether it be in craft fairs locally or online, I think the best way to go is to do it with your own designs.
Yeah.
You know, that really is going to make you feel so much better about what you're doing, so excited about what you're doing. And it, you don't have to do all the work. You don't have to draft it by hand and learn pattern drafting and all that stuff. You know, you can hire people to do that kind of thing for you. It's true. And you can make that happen. That's what I will say. I think most indie pattern companies out there have the same kind of approach that I have on the subject. And it doesn't feel good. It has happened to me before where people have sold my things online and I recognize my patterns and without any attribution, without any recognition, you know, saying this pattern is by this person.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel good.
Yeah. If you ask a designer for permission and they say no, you need to respect that. I think that is really important. And that goes back to that mutual respect in the community. Some people are going to not want to share what you want them to share with you. And that's up to them. That's why you need to ask the question, you know?
Yeah.
That's a bummer, but I think it's good that we're talking about it.
Yes.
And I am interested to hear what other people's opinions are on this.
Yeah. And thank you to Raylene for bringing it up.
Yeah. Okay. So sharing sewing knowledge online.
Yes. I think that there are so many people out there who have the coolest sewing tips and tricks, but they're shy to share them.
Yeah.
For lots of reasons. But one of them being that there's already hundreds of invisible zipper tutorials online. Why should I do one?
because maybe you have the coolest invisible zipper trick ever, or maybe you're going to be the person that whoever's on the other side of the computer Googling how to install an invisible zipper, maybe you're going to explain it in that certain way that's really going to resonate with someone and it's going to change their life.
Exactly. It really doesn't matter that there's already a bunch of people explaining how to do something online.
Yeah.
Just add it to the pile.
Yeah.
The more sharing and tutorials and everything, the better, right?
Yeah. And from a business perspective, if you, let's say, have a blog where you want to drive more traffic to your blog, having those tutorials on there is a really great way for you to bring people in, mm-hmm. to kind of hook them in, and then they're going to fall in love with your personality.
Yes.
And they're going to start following you, you know, not just that tutorial that you posted. So I think there can never be too much content on a specific topic. And that's one of the amazing things about the sewing community, is that it's so vast. There's so many people sharing their knowledge online. And I just think it can continue to build and build and build. And that is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And it's good when you're creating tutorials to use your own language. Try not to copy word for word from other tutorials, or, you know, we've all Googled the definition for, well, maybe not all of us, but the definition for like edge stitching.
Yeah.
And then you get like a literal definition from Google and you don't want to copy that word for word, you know, put your own spin on it. And also create your own illustrations and take your own photos. And it's always good to give attribution. So if you are using photos or illustration from anywhere else, if you're not a business and you're just a blogger or home sewer and sharing stuff like that, it's just good to give attribution, to link to other people, make sure it's clear where you got your resources from, where you got ideas for things from, if you can remember yeah. when you're sharing. And same with sharing on Instagram, you know, tag each other, give attribution when you can.
Yeah. I think that's really important.
Yeah.
So let's go back to business for a second.
It's always business with you.
I know. It's always business. We talk a lot about small business on the show, and maybe some of our listeners out there are thinking about starting something themselves. I mean, I know that many of them are, because we get lots of emails from people about that, both mm-hmm. at Blackbird, I'm sure at Helen's Closet as well, and through the podcast. And if you are out there thinking about starting a business, you might feel like you are a small fish in a big old pond.
Yes.
It is competitive out there. There's a lot of businesses popping up in the sewing world because it's a great market to do business in. And it can help to make friends with the big fish. So I don't blame anyone for emailing us and asking for advice about starting a business.
No, me neither. In fact, I have a lot of respect for those people, because it does take guts
yeah.
to reach out to people and ask for help and assistance. And, you know, we were talking earlier in the show about boundaries and respect. And for the most part, people are extremely respectful when they reach out. And it just comes down to the tone that you use, where you're asking whomever it is that you want advice from for as much advice as they're willing to give, and making it clear that you're not expecting anything from them.
Yeah.
So that you're just saying, hi, I look up to you and respect you. And if there is anything or was anything that you would be willing to share with me, I would be so grateful.
Yeah.
That is always the best kind of tone for those emails, I find.
Yeah. And I think like a soft opening is a good way to go. Like, instead of laying it all out there in an email where you're writing this like huge long email where somebody might open it, somebody aka me, and feel extremely overwhelmed, you know, by all the words.
Yes.
and I think like starting off just opening up the conversation and saying like, hey, I'm going to start this business and I'd love to chat with you about it. Like, are you open to that? And then wait for that engagement, because it can be overwhelming sometimes when we get all those questions and feel like it, you know, it's a huge commitment to sort of get in there and give a whole bunch of advice. But yeah. we do it. And I definitely have like my go-to tips for people who are thinking about starting a fabric shop. And they're good tips, things that I've learned over the years. I'm happy to lay that out there and share what I want to share. Mm-hmm. And there are some things that I'd rather not share. And again, that's something that I'm working on. I don't know if that's good or bad, or if that's what I should be doing, but never hurts to ask.
Yeah. And you're doing people a disservice by giving them all the information.
Yeah.
Because the journey and becoming good at business, mm-hmm. and especially the businesses that we're in, is doing the work and figuring it out for yourself,
yeah.
and making those connections yourself, especially when it comes to things like suppliers, which I'm sure is probably what you're referring to.
Yeah, it is. We do definitely get people asking where we get our fabrics, mm-hmm. and it's tough, right? Because we work hard to foster those relationships with suppliers, and there is only so many in the pool, right? It's not an infinite amount. So you get to a point where a lot of fabric shops are carrying the same things, and it can get a little bit repetitive and a little bit frustrating if you're releasing something and somebody else releases the same thing. At the end of the day, I think that part is okay, but really the information is out there. Like, if you want to find the leading suppliers in the US or Canada, like going to a trade show, doing some Googling, like you can find that out. I do that particular thing. I find it a little bit cheeky to ask, but I don't think everyone's going to agree with me because, for example, what we started off the show talking about, Rachel, I think she's extremely open about that and totally into talking about it. And I think that it's all about what you're comfortable with. And for me in business, I feel like I hold that information close to me. And like I said, I struggle a little bit with, is that the right thing to do? Am I being too cagey? But that's kind of where I'm comfortable right now, and I have to go with my gut in business. Yeah. So
I think it's more than enough.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, people have to make those relationships for themselves.
Yeah.
And same with me, with people asking about how to start an indie pattern business. There's not a whole lot I can tell them other than make as many indie patterns as you can get your hands on. Really understand the community and what's going on in it with patterns. And that is the perfect foundation for starting your own pattern company. And aside from that, you know, you're going to have to figure out your own way as far as producing the patterns. And there's some courses and things like that that you can take. But I can't help you much more than that.
Yeah. Yeah.
There isn't a quick fix solution or a guidebook on how to do it.
And again, like we said before, it's all about your own unique perspective and your own unique voice. And I think that is what is going to set you apart in business, is trying to figure out how you can be different, not be the same as everybody else, but be different. Mm-hmm. And because there are so many pattern designers and shops popping up, you really have to think about how you're going to set yourself apart. And there are definitely ways. So go with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Enough about business.
Enough about business. That's fine.
Thank you for all of our listeners out there who don't care about business and listen to us waffle on about it.
I like to think that they care about us, and by association, they care about our business.
I think a lot of people have interest in what's happening in the sewing business community.
Yeah.
So hopefully it's interesting to hear about.
Yeah.
It's some hot goss.
Yeah, hot goss. I am more business and you bring me down to earth. And you're like, Caroline, we can't just only talk about business. Like,
we can't. Okay, fine. All right. What about literal competitions in the community, when people are like, I'm gonna compete, and I'm gonna pit you all against each other, and we're all gonna make dresses and someone's gonna win and everyone else is gonna lose?
Like hashtag competitions, or I don't know, there's all kinds of things,
challenges, prize draws, all sorts of stuff, giveaways. I mean, they're all forms of little mini competitions, and that can be really fun.
We have definitely noticed a shift towards more random prize draws, so people not necessarily having like a judging panel being like, this is the best in the pool, but more so random number generators, or, you know, just random comment draws or something like that, which I think is a good way to go, because everybody is coming at it from a different place, and somebody's best could be their very, 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 very best. And maybe in your opinion, it's not the best, but really, like, I feel like if we're going to foster this community feel and lift each other up, I think it's important to make it random so that it doesn't feel so much like you're getting into this comparison game.
Yeah. And I think you can have the best of both worlds, because you can hand out prizes randomly, and then you can also highlight things from your challenge that you thought were freaking incredible and that you want everyone to see just how amazing this thing is. And sure, maybe that person doesn't win, but they also have an amazing garment.
Yeah.
They've already won.
Yeah, it's true. Some of your coolest garments have come out of sewing challenges.
It's true. I find them motivating. I don't do them all the time. Yeah. And there's a lot of them happening these days, so it can be kind of hard to keep track of everything that's going on. But I do like that deadline, and especially if the challenge is forcing you to get a little bit more out of the box, like the refashioners challenges have done. But there's all sorts of ones out there, and you can join in whichever ones you feel fit best with what you're into sewing these days. But I like the more open-ended, up for interpretation challenges, where it's not, let's all sew this one thing, this one pattern or one specific kind of garment, but more, let's all try a twist or a tie. Or let's all sew, I think Sew Together for Summer is overalls and jumpsuits, and it's a bit broader, so people can pick and choose. And that way also, there's more opportunities for people to choose patterns that will fit their bodies, that are going to work well for them, or from pattern companies that they really respect. It just makes it more inclusive.
Yeah. And then also just reflecting, as somebody who is perhaps competing or participating in a challenge or a competition or some kind of a hashtag thing happening in the community, just check in with yourself and make sure that that's a good idea for you and your personality. How is it making you feel? You know, is it triggering to compare yourself to other people? Is it healthy? Are you participating and offering encouragement, or are you sitting back just sort of watching everyone else's entries come in and being like, oh, mine's going to be better?
For me, it would be a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B.
Wait till the very end to see what everyone did and then like bust out some amazing out. That's not what we're talking about today.
I know. It's hard when you're competing.
It is.
You can fall into that comparison trap.
Yeah.
But I think sewing challenges are really fun, and I hope to continue to see them becoming extra inclusive and mindful of all different sewing levels, and all different body types and all different everything.
And a little bit of competition is okay, I think, because it sort of encourages that atmosphere of growth, where if you look at it from the perspective of, that's really cool, I want to figure out how to bring up my sewing game and kind of take it to the next level so that I can just like prove myself in this sort of atmosphere, I feel like that is cool. That's a good way to kind of challenge yourself and your sewing practice, if that's healthy for you.
Yeah.
And also, while you do that, make sure that you're supporting the community and being very uplifting.
Always uplifting.
Yeah.
So what about social media? Because we talk about this a lot on the show, and it's a great place to fall into a big old comparison trap.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It is. I mean, we've said this on the show before, but don't compare your beginning to somebody else's middle. And I love that sentiment, because you're, you know, if you're just starting out sewing, there's no point in comparing yourself to somebody who's been sewing for years and years, because you're just not there yet. And that's okay. And back to that listener message at the beginning of the show, where being a beginner rocks, you know, kind of enjoy that time when everything is new and fresh and exciting and fun, and you're learning tons of new things and you're discovering this community. I think that's really fun. And then also just remembering that it's okay to take a break when you need a break from social media. I know you've done that before, and I think it is important to remember that social media is a highlight reel, and it's only, you know, a certain portion of life's experience, and you can't just experience your whole life through the lens of your phone. You know, like, you have to just put it down once in a while and enjoy the other things in life, and that's okay.
Yeah, especially the Instagram accounts that do tend to become more popular and get higher up in the algorithms are often the heavily curated ones, where every photo is amazing and life just looks perfect and flawless. And of course, that's not reality, and we know that, but it's still, sometimes you feel feelings without realizing you're feeling feelings, feelings about being worthy, or fraudy feelings, or imposter syndrome. Do I belong in this community? Can I really sew that jacket? It's never going to look as good as that person's version. So why should I even bother?
You know,
those are all normal feelings, I think, to have. But we just want to remind you that they're not real. You know, sometimes that we get on this roller coaster of social media, and it's hard not to, where am I going with this?
Social media is confusing and it can be awful sometimes, but it's also how we connect with each other. And so I think there is like a middle ground there and a sweet spot there. And it's unique to you and your own experience with it. Mm-hmm. So you have to know yourself and what you can handle. And I think you can experience, especially, I mean, I think we're talking mostly about Instagram because that's like our biggest way that we connect with the community, but you don't have to be curating your feed and making everything perfect to be able to post. I think you can post whatever you want. It does not have to be fancy. It can even be a blurry photo. And I think that you can still experience that connection in the community. So don't let that be a roadblock for you.
It's challenging because social media is the place where we're connecting with other people. It's often the place where we're feeling that sense of community, but it's also this place where we're feeling a sense of competition.
Yeah.
And they're directly linked because we're seeing other people's beautiful photos and we are being inspired to make more things than we could ever make in our lifetime every day. And that's really challenging. And we're also seeing people who are at completely different sewing levels than we are and feeling jealous or envious of that. And it's just a melting pot of emotions being in that space. But it can also be incredibly rewarding because we can share and we can make friends with people from all around the world and we can lift each other up and encourage each other and we can get encouragement in return. So it's finding the right balance on social media for you and the right level of engagement with community for you. And that's going to be different for everybody.
Yeah.
And if your level of engagement with the community is, you know, listening to this show every week and never signing into Instagram or Facebook, that's fine too.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even have to listen to the show every week.
Yeah. Listen every week. But no, I agree. I think that the point that we're trying to get across in this episode is just reminding everyone to check in with themselves every once in a while and come at this practice and this sewing community from a positive place and an uplifting place. Mm-hmm. And just remember that community should come before competition. That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. Thank you to our sponsor, Spoonflower. You can get 15% off your first Spoonflower order at try.spoonflower.com/love to sew.
Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please leave us a review. It really helps other sewists to discover us.
We're recording today in sunny Vancouver, Canada. You can find me, Caroline, at blackbirdfabrics.com and Helen at helenscloset.ca. And you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
If you're enjoying the show and you want to help us out or maybe hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon. If you contribute $5 or more a month, you'll get access to a bonus episode every month. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
Our show is produced by Sam Humphrey. Thank you, Sam. Thank you all so much for listening. And we'll talk to you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye. That was so weird.
I have a question for you.
What's that?
How low can you go?
I can go pretty low.